Do you want to be happy? Tell yourself better stories. In fact, telling yourself better stories will make you healthier, more successful, more loving, and more loved. Today's talk is about storytelling. We all like stories because they are real, they're entertaining, and easy to relate to. We like to tell stories because they allow us to get the attention of listeners, and maybe even to gain status in their eyes, in our own eyes, as we do tell the stories. We tell stories to relieve the pressure of a story that we just took in. We just heard it or saw it on TV, some horrific example of human behavior. And in order to relieve that pressure, we share it with someone else. While it may seem as though telling a story is the equivalent of giving a report about an experience, it is not. Storytelling is causative. Storytelling is commanding and programming. A better overall view of storytelling is to see it as a manifestational activity. To tell a story is to refine a blueprint which will be built to automatically by our subconscious minds. Let me give you a few definitions. A story is a recital of an event or a series of events, either with true or fictitious descriptions. A viewpoint is a position from which something is observed or considered, a point of view. It is also the mental attitude that determines a person's opinions or judgments. An attitude is the way a person views something or tends to behave toward it, often in an evaluative way. I could say that we tell stories from within a cloud of energy that holds our attitude. That attitude filters what we perceive and what we broadcast to others. It tells us what others are like and what we are like. It tells us what we did and what we are likely to experience in the future. Our consciousnesses are the sum total of our mindset, our attitude, beliefs, fears, hopes, dreams, superstitions, and all the environmental signals that we've received and also sent. Another way to say it is, our consciousnesses are the inventory of stories we or others made up about our experiences. Our health, happiness, and success are a result of our created stories. The good news is that our stories can be reviewed and revised. An attitude is a chosen position, which means other positions can be chosen. As airy-fairy as it may sound, we can and we want our stories to have a more compassionate viewpoint. We want more forgiveness, and we want awareness and love in them. That way, we are better prepared to continue to reach out for growth, achievement, and to cause desirable effects in our own lives and the lives of others. I suspect that our negative experiences, which are created largely by our interpretation, are due to a lack of awareness. What makes reviewing and revising so powerful is that all of us can have greater awareness now just by reaching out for it. Trauma, by its very nature, indicates the presence of environmental signals too intense to be handled effectively. If we could deal with these types of situations effectively, they wouldn't be traumatic. We would just deal with them, resolve them as well as we could, and move on to the next experience in our lives. Unfortunately, the human need to make sense out of experiences can be problematic. When we create those meanings, when we are under the most stress, which prevents accurate mental processing of experiences, when we are often in pain or emotional or physical, when we are shocked by the treatment which we are receiving, which is far outside of our own normal expectations, or when we're being dominated and overwhelmed by people and forces much more powerful than we are. To create life-damaging meanings under the worst circumstances is terrible. But instinctively, we have no choice. While these stories we make up are instantaneous and dramatic, we can go back in time and recall, review, and revise those stories. Why don't we automatically do this reviewing and revising if it's so life-enhancing? To me, the answer is because we don't want to touch something that hurts. We avoid thinking about or looking at or talking about those experiences unless we have the habit of defensively going into self-justification, such as, they deserved it, it wasn't my fault, they had it coming, and on and on. Fortunately, this overt self-deceit and con job of others may appear to be working, but at the level of law of cause and effect, it isn't over yet. In our approach to using storytelling therapeutically, there must be certain principles that stand out. And certain words came to my mind. I call them now the six R's. Recall, review, revise, redemption, remorse, and reengage. I just bought the book, The Power of Meaning, by Emily Esfahani Smith. From just reading a few pages of the introduction convinced me to read this book with a yellow highlighter in my hand. To back up a bit, years ago when I worked for Dale Carnegie Organization, I heard this expression, small minds talk about people, average minds talk about events, great minds talk about ideas. I like that because I found myself always trying to drill down in a conversation for some universal principles or ideas that could shift my awareness and maybe the awareness of others. Today, I would say I was looking for either the meaning or a meaning that would satisfy my idea hunger. It would be easy to tell a story focusing mostly on the people in an event, or mostly on the event itself, or mostly on the meaning or ideas that are deeper in that event. And this is what we've been doing our entire lives, telling stories with these three focuses, and perhaps emphasizing one focus over the others, and then changing to another focus. It is those stories we tell that have the most powerful meanings that we will want to recall. If the meanings don't lead us to accept growth in the nature of our own growth in awareness and effectiveness, it would be wise to review and revise that meaning. Because divine consciousness is seeking to care for our well-being all the time, we may be able to arrive at meanings that reinforce our growth on all levels. Mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical, nurturing and nourishing on all levels, our healing on all levels, our protection, our fulfillment of need, providing work for us, ensuring our survival, recognizing rhythm in action in our lives, and validating the law of cause and effect on a daily basis. I am guessing that we could take any story event from our early lives and use that overlay of those nine divine actions that divine consciousness is using to care for our well-being to find a better and more empowering meaning that positions us to continue to grow our awareness of exactly how divine consciousness is operating in our lives. Over the years, I have frequently thought about any group of people and said, they have stories that make their lives valuable, not only to them, but to other people. And how cool it would be to know what those stories are, instead of only that person knowing what their life has been like. Just the other day, as I was standing on an Amtrak platform awaiting a train to New York City, I looked at the 15 or 20 people on the other side of the track awaiting trains that would take them into Washington, D.C. I had the thought of taking a photo of the people, numbering each person, run and get their contact information, and then follow up with phone calls and interviews and get each one of them to tell me their stories. Before my train arrived, a flood of people came onto the other side's platform, taking that number to about 75 people, and then it became less interesting to me. The point is that I believe every life has events, stories, and meanings that prove that we are all on epic journeys that we should be honoring. We are the heroes in our lives, and by knowing how to manage our viewpoints, interpretations, and the meanings we attach to our experiences, gives us great power to be, to do, and to have. To begin maximizing the values of our experiences by being willing to recall, review, and revise the stories we made up or accepted from other storytellers, we could prioritize the 12 worlds, spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance. And then we could determine which are most satisfactory and which are the least satisfactory. And then we could prioritize them, which ones we wanted to work on. Our natural desires would come into our awareness about ways to improve our conditions, or we would become aware of fears that prevent us from moving toward improvement. Both of these tendencies, belief that we can improve and belief that we can't improve, are based on earlier stories. That's it. They represent healing opportunities. I frequently speak about the 10 emotional states. Shame, starting from the bottom, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, and peace. As a way to increase awareness of how our emotional states affects how we process environmental signals, what we see, hear, think, feel, smell, taste, touch, and sense. I usually describe two ways to use this convenient, easy-to-remember scale, and this is why it's easy to remember. SAG, S-A-G, FLAP, F-L-A-P, CAP, C-A-P. Easy enough. SAG, FLAP, CAP. Shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, and peace. So the first way I use this is as a ladder going up to the next. So this demonstrates the reality that as we climb up to the next emotional state, we move to the next step, our view of many things improves. We see ourselves, we see others, we see God, we see life, we see opportunity in better and better lights every time we take another step up. The second way I tend to use the 10 emotional states is I regularly represent it as kind of like a set of 10 stepping stones, much like you would expect to see in a garden path. The form of these 10 emotional states conveys that we start on any journey, it is likely that we will have to progress from shame to apathy to grief to fear and so on, right on up through these steps. And it seems like the human nature of self-protection, that we think something is wrong with us just before we start a project, before we start a journey, before we get engaged with something's wrong with me, I can't really do it. And if we recognize that that is a natural thing, and we're stepping on that stepping stone or that step of the ladder, and we don't need to remain there, we can continue to progress, go, oh, this is natural, let me see what the next one. It would be apathy, which is depression or feeling overwhelmed or despair. Oh, it's too complicated. And if we know that that's just typical, we don't let it stop us permanently. This brings me to a third and maybe a new application of the 10 emotional states in storytelling. I bet lots of stories start with an emotion, and then a failure to cause a desirable effect, which leads us to plummet to a lower emotional state. Just think. We do something with the hope or expectation or dream that it's going to turn out well, and it doesn't. And then, boom, we go down the emotional state scale. But without recall or review or revising, we get stuck in that belief that says we are that emotional state. I am shame. I am apathy. I am grief. No, that's not true. I think it's safe to assume that our emotional state goes down when we think we have failed at meeting our needs. Those needs could be our ego needs, the four driving needs of the ego that express through the personality, that say, you know, defend the self from criticism, emotional or physical attack, take the best, or come in first in the race of life, no matter what opposition there is. Take the best for yourself, no matter what the opposition is. And then fourth, hold on to what you've accumulated, what you have acquired or taken. You know, be it status, property, power, money, influence, family, friends. Hold on to that, no matter what other people are doing in opposition. But we have other needs that I describe using more convenient way, Sufuli plus two. S-F-U-L-I plus two. Survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, the need to look good, get approval. And when we fail at that, or we fail at our own expectations of ourselves or others and other people's expectations of us, or we fail with our own intentions or the intentions of others, and when we didn't communicate or we didn't receive or understand the communication that came from others, those things go down, and that's what we ought to be focusing on, reviewing and revising. And as we go downhill mentally, emotionally, and over a period of time, even physically, we need to get to the point where we decide, hey, that old story that brought me down, that's no longer acceptable. I'm not putting up with this. And oftentimes there's a degree of ferocity with that decision. And that decision point is when we start to rebound with a focus on a new, empowering, will and purpose-filled story that lifts us up to new heights. We are always supported in this positive change, as the prayer I'm about to recite indicates. This is a pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.